are true believers. Spider-Man is amazing again in the new film directed by The Onion's John Watts. Owing a lot to John Hughes' hilarious teen angst films of the 80s, Spider-Man Homecoming ditches the dreary origin story because we've already Uncle Ben there done that, and gives us what Spider-Man is all about, a mythical coming-of-age story of a misfit teen.
Today we're taking a look at the new film Spider-Man Homecoming with the very funny and insightful Brian Sweeney, whose favorite superhero of all time is Spider-Man. Join us for this and all the hot news. NPR tweets the Declaration of Independence and Republicans lose their shit.
The ultimate battle, ¿quién es más macho? Star Trek or Star Wars?
And insurance scams that don't pay.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you are listening to Feast of Fun because for the past 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. Won't you take a moment now to ensure that Feast of Fun is around for the future? Visit feastoffun.com/plus and access all 13 years of amazing shows.
Today, we're taking a look at the new Spider-Man Homecoming movie directed by John Watts, which is making a spider ton of money on its open weekend at the box office, $111,000 million.
$117 million, was it?
$117 million. Joining us is the very funny and insightful Brian Sweeney, who's dedicated most of his life, when he's not doing stand-up comedy, to following Spider-Man as a franchise and as a comic book superhero. He's your favorite superhero, Brian.
Yes.
What is it about this young, muscular 15-year-old boy who shoots a lot of sticky stuff all over the place that you find so attractive?
I love young boy cum.
And you're Catholic.
And I'm Catholic. So that's all it is, basically.
No, but there is an attraction, because you've said over the, we've known you for a number of years now, and we've talked about the Marvel Universe and DC and all the comic books, but it's like, for you, Spider-Man really is like the ultimate superhero.
Yes, well, he's my favorite. The ultimate superhero is Superman, okay. Obviously.
Well, for you.
But the one for me, yes, the one that appeals to my you number the most. One has always been Spider-Man. He's, when I was in kindergarten, my mom used to videotape episodes, reruns of the 60s cartoon, and to watch every day. So, but even, and there's a lot of pictures of me as a kid in a Spider-Man shirt and Spider-Man cake I had for my birthday one year. And I love Spider-Man more than anything.
You're talking about the Spider-Man, the cartoon that had the amazing jazzy theme song.
Yes, the famous theme song.
Spider-Man. That's composed by Academy Award winner Paul Francis Webster and Robert Bob Harris. I have Wikipedia too.
And you're even more, and you have, so you brought us some star, some Spider-Man memorabilia
spider
today.
Shit.
Spider yes. stuff.
Yes.
You're wearing Spider-Man armbands.
I am. It's very fancy. Very fancy. Very amazing. Yes, it's Spider-Man is the greatest. He's a deconstruction of the comic book superhero character. It's the first time, I don't know about the first time, but it's definitely
deconstruction of the comic book superhero. How so? Because, I mean, it just seems like it's very much an archetype of, like, the person who's a misfit, who doesn't fit in, suddenly has a almost catastrophic experience that transforms them and puts them in a situation where they're forced to look at their values and their lives and either decide to do good or evil. Because, you know, as Spider-Man's Uncle Ben, gentle Uncle Ben, says, with great power comes great responsibility.
He didn't say that. He says it in the movies. Oh. But he never
and
said
that. And RuPaul
he
likes to say, with great pair of heels comes great responsitrinity.
Mm-hmm. That's hilarious. Anyway, so
why is Spider-Man breaking this archetype?
Yeah, what's up with the deconstruction?
Well, he's like the first. The Fantastic Four did have trouble with the bills, but Spider-Man is the idea is, like, what would you do if you were a teenager and you got superpowers? And that was, that's not like a normal thing without having somebody like a mentor or something that might be like Billy and Shazam and Captain Marvel, but
or Batman and Robin or Superman or
yes, but that's always. But what this was, there was no Spider-Man. It showed how there's a lot of things. Spider-Man is the Charlie Brown of superheroes, and even when he wins, he loses, and he can't do anything. He can't, like, Batman and Superman and all of them, they're able to be cool and they always, like, win the day. And then when they're done with it, like, it's over. But Spider-Man does his stuff and then he has to just go home. And J. Jonah Jameson, the Daily Bugle, just writes about how much he sucks no matter what. He, the constant, in the beginning of the Spider-Man comics, it was a young teenage boy and he gets bitten by the radioactive spider. And so he does what anyone probably would do at that age and was like, I'm going to make money off of, and jizz a lot. But, and,
well, doesn't he like it? You know, I mean, especially I'm more familiar obviously with the film and television adaptations of Spider-Man than I am with the comic book. And certainly the Sam Raimi adaptation in the first movie, there is a very much a metaphor of a young man discovering how to masturbate, you know, and he gets bitten by this spider. He goes into his bedroom and takes off his shirt and is like, "Ugh, I'm so ripped." And then there's, you know, a lot of the humorous scenes where he's like trying to discover his spider web formula and causing a big mess in his bedroom, which is certainly a metaphor for masturbation.
In the Sam Raimi ones, he has his own webs. His body makes his own webs. The masturbation thing, that's not there in the original stories. He just makes it. It's a originally it's like a 13 or 15 page story that's in the last issue of a comic book called Amazing Fantasy. It's in Amazing Fantasy number 15. It's the first telling the origin story of Spider-Man, and Peter Parker is a nerd who no one likes, and he's like, "Hey, he goes to a science experiment thing because no one likes him, and he's a nerd." And then it's a radioactive thing, and then the spider goes down in this radioactive beam, and it then jumps on him and bites him, and then dies. But then as he's walking home, he feels weird, and then he jumps out of the way of a car and is like sticking to the wall, and he has super strength. And So
I imagine the science lab probably ran into some experiments that weren't successful and just ended up in lawsuits.
I'm sure, but the spider, it was an accident. Like, the spider, it was just a lone spider that just came down from, like, the ceiling and got caught in the beam.
Oh, yeah.
And then jumped out. It wasn't, the spider wasn't being experimented on. That came later with the movies. But, so then he goes to make money off of it and goes on TV and does a bunch of tricks and all this stuff, and then
he becomes a sideshow freak like Wonder Woman for a while in the TV series was doing, dodging bullets in burlesque shows.
Yes.
With red buttons as the carny folk.
And he gets screwed out of money of them paying for him. And so a robber robs the television place, and the cop is like, "Hey, why didn't you stop him? You could have stopped him." And he's like, "From now on, I'm looking out for number one." And then when he comes home, Uncle Ben had been, there was an intruder that came in, and Uncle Ben like struggled with him and he shot him. And so he goes to find the guy who did it. And it's the guy that he could have stopped earlier. And that's when he realizes that with great power comes great responsibility. So it's the Batman mythos is a crazy thing where it's a childlike thing of it's a boy who saw his parents shot in an alley and said, "I'm going to make it so no one ever has to go through this ever." So it's just a story of like arrested development mentally, because it's a ridiculous thing for an adult to believe that like I have to keep fighting this so that no one goes through this. Superman is born from a doomed planet, and he's always an outsider. Spider-Man is he's not cool at all. And that's what this new movie, not to get too far into the new movie yet, but like Spider-Man Homecoming, what I loved about him in Civil War and especially in Homecoming is Spider-Man is always portrayed as fucking annoying. Mm-hmm. And the heroes don't really like him that much because he doesn't shut up and he's just annoying.
Like a teenage kid.
Yes, but even when he's not a teenager, he's still annoying and he doesn't like play well with others really. Mm-hmm. But that's also like he has this chip on his shoulder, but he's always in the earlier Spider-Man comics, like there's always this problem that he's having. He has no money because he's like the sole breadwinner then for. So that's why he gets the job at the Daily Bugle taking pictures of Spider-Man. And he's constantly like having to get medicine for Aunt May and stuff like that. And he goes to school and everyone's talking about how awesome Spider-Man is and how much Peter Parker sucks. And Peter Parker like can't beat up like his bullies because he can't do it. There's nothing that he's able to do, and then
so he's kind of stuck in a bad situation and he can't get out of it.
Well, it's also it's a like true hero thing, and it's a Spider-Man thing that's shown throughout the movies even, but it's always a thing of him jumping into things and trying to like when he tries to pull the fairy back together in Spider-Man Homecoming. He's being crazy. Like, he can't do that, but he doesn't give up because that's just who Spider-Man is. And it's like, it's a part of who Spider-Man is, but he never is able to win because even when he's able to win things, he still loses because he can't get, like, the girl from it and he can't get money. Like, there's no reward. He just goes home bruised and battered and he has to like sew his own suit. Like it's just completely different from any other superhero of the time.
It's really interesting that no matter whether it's DC or Marvel, a lot of comic book superheroes are orphaned. Superman's parents are dead. Batman's parents are dead. Most of the X-Men have run away from home.
Parents muddy the water.
Well, Harry Potter.
Hamlet.
It goes back farther and farther than why that. Every Disney character.
What's the appeal, and why do we need to have our superheroes be orphans?
Well, the superheroes, and most heroes, have to be born, not have to, but most are born in tragedy. There's something about...
And losing your parents is the ultimate tragedy?
Well, what I think it is, because sometimes, especially like when you just have, like Aladdin, say, he's an orphan, we assume, because he's just on the street with Abu, yeah. But they don't, like, talk about his parents. They say, I blame parents, except he hasn't got them. And, like, that's the only sort of reference to his parents. They don't, like, spend a long time discussing his parents. But aside, there's, like, Cinderella has a father. But there's always these like, characters.
Cinderella's father's dead, and she's being raised by her wicked stepmother and her wicked stepsisters.
Oh, right, not Cinderella. Not Cinderella.
They're all dead.
Jasmine. Jasmine's father. I was thinking of Jasmine from Aladdin again. But no, those things, because it's, yes, the loss of a parent is a huge thing, but I feel like what the main thing is, you have to get rid of parents, because when you start your character, you don't want them to have a bunch of stuff that they're able to just fall back on.
The rules.
Well, otherwise you'd be like, if it was a mom or a dad, they'd be around and be like, what, you can't go out at night? What? What's happening?
Yes.
But whereas an aunt, you can kind of get by. And then also, too, is like when you're an orphan, you have like a certain sense of agency. Like, I can do this on my own. I don't need a grown-up. And to children, there's a great appeal to that.
There's also the classic, like, American feeling of being self-made, quote-unquote, and all this shit of, like, you can just go out to a frontier and make your own shit.
So are comic books like libertarian propaganda?
Some of them are. Steve Ditko was a big Ayn Rand person. But I think that all it really is, like, away from ideology or anything like that, it's just because it's easier to start your character at zero. And have
him grow.
Because you have to explain, like, well, why doesn't he just go to his parents and say, like, hey, can you help me? Or, like, with Peter Parker, he has to be strapped for cash. And if you have, like, parents and, like, two people, it's like, well, why aren't they doing anything? Like, if he's 15 or whatever. So if you have, like, the sickly aunt who used to be, like, 90 years old for some reason, It's just the orphaned people are just always, and also daddy issues in general, like, drive 99% of all protagonists throughout all of
I did this for my mother, Martha. Your mother is Martha too. Let's make out.
Well, and Peter definitely has some daddy issues because now he kind of has like Tony Stark as his new daddy figure.
Yes.
And who doesn't want Robert Downey Jr. as a daddy?
He's handsome and he's rich.
Yeah, and that's basically his superpower, just like Batman, is being rich.
Doesn't he say that in the movie?
He says it in the Justice League trailer, but it's not that's not really 100% true.
Doesn't Robert Downey Jr. say this in the...
It was in the trailer.
Yeah. Right?
No, Bruce Wayne says
it. Both of them have said it.
Ben Affleck says it in the Justice League trailer. But, I mean, in the comics, Batman is the world's greatest detective, and he knows, like, every form of karate and kung fu. And he's traveled the world and, like, knows every single thing about everything. Like, that was the time he spent before he became Batman. But so he has a lot more than just rich. Tony Stark also has the classic genius archetype of, because he's smart in one area, he's able to do anything. So he can just come up with anything. And that's, yeah, that's like a big whatever.
Spider-Man Homecoming, to me, is so refreshing and exciting as a movie. And listeners, if you haven't caught the film, you definitely want to skip later on when we talk about some of the big reveals. But it's directed by John Watts, who is, you know.
John Waters did what?
John Watts.
Oh, John Waters.
He doesn't direct films
anymore.
Yeah, when
Peter Parker ate that piece of dog shit, it was weird.
So John Watts is one of the founding directors of the Onion News Network and has a really brilliant timing and sensibility for comedy. And certainly, Homecoming owes a lot, not just to John Watts's roots as a comedic director, but also to the films of John Hughes, and most specifically Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where you have this sort of rascally antihero who's running through the suburbs trying to get to his mission. And certainly much Spider-Man Homecoming pays tribute to it. And in fact, there's a scene where they're actually watching Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, and I would say that Peter Parker is probably the opposite of Ferris Bueller, because Ferris Bueller is able to, like, magically make everything work out.
Mm.
And as it's shown, like, throughout the movie, as it should be, like, Peter Parker just has to keep making tough decisions that make him ostracized from everything and everyone. And that's, like, the main thing of being a hero, is that...
A sacrifice.
Yeah, and you're not able to... Like, if you... And I feel like Spider-Man Homecoming, in a way that has never been portrayed in the movie, the Spider-Man movies, is you always feel like when Spider-Man goes out that he's always outmatched, except in like the very beginning when he stops like a guy robbing, like stealing a bike and stuff. But like when he's up against like Vulture and his guys, you're just like, oh shit, like he's only 15, like you're gonna die. Like,
yeah, all he can do is stick to things, and like these people have like ray guns.
Yeah, and there's not a lot, like I don't know of any other superhero movie I've seen where I've thought like, he shouldn't be doing this. Like, where I was like, he can't figure.
Well,
you kind of
like, you know, the parent in you comes out because you're like, this is a kid. It's only 14, 15 years old. I don't want to see him in danger.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, Bruce Wayne, you're like, he's an adult.
You don't really care. Whatever. Yeah.
And it's Ben Affleck. If he dies, he dies.
You kind of want to see Ben Affleck.
There's always Matt Damon.
You kind of want to see these, like, powerful, strong, wealthy, comfortable, egotistical Hollywood actors suffer in the big screen. Whereas when we see this very vulnerable Tom Holland, which is my favorite drag queen, you know.
Why do you say favorite drag queen?
Well, because he was lip syncing for his life in lip sync battles in drag.
Well, he came out, he was dressed as, and he did Singing in the Rain, and he was wearing a raincoat. And then he did a little reveal and came back out, like, dressed in drag and did around his umbrella, right?
Yes.
And he did some backflips and whatnot. And he really wowed it.
He really, in real life, he can do those flips.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there's a visceral quality to this Spider-Man movie that the CGI, of course, Homecoming has plenty of CGI. But the fact that Tom Holland felt like the authentic Spider-Man in ways that other actors who've played him, and certainly, who's that guy who's now saying he's bisexual?
was his name? Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield just didn't capture that.
He
didn't
say he was bisexual. I don't know. Brian,
he said he'd
Brian
suck a dick
look.
For a little publicity. Is
Brian
that what he said?
No, he didn't say that. He said that he's actually, this is the quote, he said that he was actually gay.
For pay.
He said he was playing a gay character.
No, well, he's in Angels in America yeah. right now, and so he's like, I could totally see why I would, like, suck a dick, because, you know, I'm an actor, and, you know, actors kind of do stuff like that.
You're
go
right.
Go anytime.
You're right. Oh, I was wondering, you know, I thought you were going to stop. That's why I stopped speaking, so you can edit it in. he said, watching Drag Race, it's RuPaul's Drag Race is what he meant, is my life outside of this play, Angels in America. I am a gay man right now, just without the physical act. That's all. And so now people are like, oh, he's gay, he's coming out, da, 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 you know, and so, but it's like, no, he just watches RuPaul's Drag Race. I guess they did kind of like a drag con or something like that in the UK, and he showed up for it because he really loves it. But also, too, you have to remember, he's in Angels in America right now, and so which is a gay play based on somebody dying of AIDS, you know, in a hospital, and so it's he's trying to ingratiate himself with the gay audience.
It's a very good play yes. that focuses on the experiences of gay men dying of AIDS mm-hmm. in the 1980s, and Roy Cohn, mm-hmm. who is a very famous villain,
and also Donald Trump's mentor,
Oh, and
I
his
hope
death
that they don't
AIDS.
Have his son in the White House at all.
Whose son?
So anyway, it's Andrew
Gary Cohn.
Roy Cohn, he doesn't have any kids. He was he's a gay guy.
He died of AIDS.
Yeah. And he was but did Donald Trump dump him after he was diagnosed
and
with AIDS?
And so after Roy Cohn was diagnosed with AIDS, Donald Trump cut off all communications with him and left him out in the cold.
But he was a jerk. He was part of like that whole Rosenberg trial and he was the right-hand man of Joseph McCarthy.
And so, you know, Andrew Garfield is a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race. And just because you enjoy a little, you know, stuffing dollar bills down the G strings of Katya and Alyssa Edwards doesn't make you gay. It just makes you fabulous.
But there's no such thing as being gay because sexuality is a spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Oh, does that mean you're also a little bit gay for play?
Yeah, there's no gender is a societal construct, and so is sexuality. So.
You're saying that very cynically.
No, it's whatever. I believe it.
Brian has a girlfriend. Quit hitting on him.
I'm not hitting on you.
Right here.
I'm just asking a question.
Everything's.
You don't have to answer the question either.
Listen, we all know it's a spectrum. There's at some point in time where I present two people to Brian, I say, here's a very unattractive woman, and here's a very attractive man. Which one do you want to have sex with? And eventually, it's that scale is going to tilt where the woman's going to be so ugly, he's going to be like, I'll take the man.
All right. And vice versa. You know, it's like, I really haven't been with women, but if I was with Jennifer Lopez, I'd probably go fuck her in the ass before I fuck her in the pussy.
Well, because you know she likes that, because she's got that big booty, so she's begging for it.
We were talking before we started taping about Jennifer Lopez's butt, that most guys think about doing up the butt with her before they do it up the front.
Well, like her and Kim Kardashian, like her and Nicki Minaj, like I just wonder how long until you just broach anal, until you're just like, you know
what? I think
what?
You start with that, don't you?
No.
It's
gay man.
It's
girls.
Yeah.
They have an entire self-lubricating hole that, it's... throughout millions and millions of years has made sure to feel amazing when
you
put your penis in it.
A butthole is also a self-lubricating hole. It just has a different kind of lubricant.
A smelly one. Who do you think has the most silicone in their butt out of all those three women? Rihanna, Kim Kardashian, Jennifer Lopez.
Not Nicki Minaj?
Nicki Minaj. You think she's got the most? Okay.
Marissa Tomei is where it's at, baby.
Marissa's tomatoes. Hey.
Who knew Marissa Tomei is making a comeback as Aunt May in Spider-Man Homecoming? Hot Aunt May. Finally, on Aunt May, you could fuck.
She was in Civil War.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Spider-Man's great. Aunt May is hot. No. Whatever.
Holland is fuckable. Finally, a Spider-Man you can fuck.
Zendaya, Laura Harrier, all these. Yeah, it's amazing. They put a bunch of attractive people in a movie.
How did that happen?
I don't know. For some reason, I got aroused while seeing faces that are perfectly symmetrical. I don't know. It was the first time I've ever seen something like it.
But I have to say, like, compared to the other actors, you know, Andrew Garfield and what was the name of the guy, the Seabiscuit guy?
Tobey Maguire.
I just feel like he very, very much is able to give us this charismatic teenage anti-hero and at the same time, or misfit, and at the same time really develop vulnerability as a character. And, you know, and I'm thinking about Tobey Maguire at the end of Spider-Man 3, the third Spider-Man movie that he was in, where he's weeping at the end. And it just felt like he made this kind of ugly, weird face when he's crying. And everybody at the movie theater was like, what is going on here? You know, and he's crying at the Sandman fades off into the wind.
Yeah, he forgives the Sandman. Spider-Man 3, I defend Spider-Man 3.
Well, you like all the Spider-Man movies.
No, not necessarily.
Which one do you not like?
The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is a bad movie. There's
which
one's
that about?
Electro, Jamie Foxx is Electro. There's a scene though where he saves a little kid from bullies that is awesome in that movie, but everything else is not very good. And the first Andrew Garfield, The Amazing Spider-Man, is okay, but it's just like sort of unnecessary. It doesn't do anything special about with the character. But yeah, the Peter Parker Spider-Man in this is a very like sort of realistic, more for lack of a better term, type of
relatable
kid. Yeah, like, and also I like how they had like the world of the Avengers and like this crazy world where like aliens exist and Norse gods come and there's a giant green monster like fighting in New York. How like they talk about that and it's normal, or not normal, but like that's their world. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't like touch these kids. Like there's still like normal stuff going on. Like even if like that's just sort of in the background of like mm-hmm. yeah, like just because like the world doesn't change because the Avengers exist. And I think that was like a really cool thing that like they really like kept Spider-Man into this street level, into like it seemed like just like a specific little part of Queens. And it was much different than most Marvel movies that are like around the globe and stuff like that. And I really liked where he's on top of the Washington mm-hmm. Monument and he's fucking scared because mm-hmm. he's so high up. And that's always, and I seriously, like in the, from all of the Spider-Man movies, when he's just swinging through New York and he's swinging through the skyscrapers and stuff, I was always like, how is he just great at this right away? Mm-hmm. And spider sense can be a way to say that, but it just seems like he would be hitting himself on the skyscrapers quite a bit. And so I like a beginning character Spider-Man who isn't okay with just mm-hmm. giant skyscrapers just hanging out on top of him. And
well, I like what you said too about like they create that own small little universe, even though he's part of this big, you know, the Avengers or kind of something in the background. Everything does kind of takes place at his school. You know, the enemy is a lot closer to him than you actually think, and so it is like this little microcosm.
And this enemy, let us give incredible props to Michael Keaton, who is fucking amazing in this movie. That scene is probably the best scene. Like the scene that,
do you want to announce that there's a spoiler alert at this
you
part?
Already did. Why are you listening to this?
Just please. So right now you're revealing a lot of stuff. So if you want to skip forward about 15 minutes.
Well, Michael Keaton's a vulture.
Yeah, but he's the vulture. But he's the bad scene, guy. But there's a scene.
Which so is in the trailers. So yeah, like, you know, yeah, it's going to, it shouldn't, but
yeah.
He turns out to be Liz Allen, who Peter has a crush on. He takes her to homecoming, and when he goes to pick her up, and it never even occurred to me
because
she's
racist.
Black. Yeah, because she's half black mm-hmm. and half white, so you don't even think about it.
Right.
And Michael Keaton opens the door, and I was like, oh, shit, like, he fucking has her hostage or something. And he was like, hey, I'm her dad. And I was like, oh, shit. And I love that Peter Parker is so freaked out. Like, he's not cool. He is a 15-year-old kid who's like, oh, fuck. Like, I have no idea how this is.
Right.
How
this is going to go. What am I going to do? What's going to happen? Yeah. It's like, I've got a crush on this girl, but then her dad's like this evil monster.
It's also like, there is no good options here. Mm-hmm. It's aside from, like, the vulture is going to kill me. Mm-hmm. It is the only thing I can do. The best case scenario is that I ruin the girl I love's life. Like,
and that too, it's such a relatable plot line, and it's so grounded.
My girlfriend's dad was the Vulture.
Yeah.
In high school.
Well, they're all terrible men, aren't they?
But that, I mean, what teenage boy or girl cannot relate to dating somebody who their parents have it out for them?
Oh, or just you're just intimidated the fuck out of them, you know, for whatever reason.
But Michael,
because you're trying to bang this girl, they know you're trying to stick your dick in their hole, and they're like, no, you stay away from that hole.
And I have to say that, like, this movie and talking to a lot of young people on in real life,
Grindr,
on Grindr and stuff, a lot of young people, teenagers and the people in their 20s really feel like this is the best teen movie since Ferris Bueller's Pretty in Pink or Ferris Bueller's Day Off or those John Hughes movies from the 80s. This really stands as a teen angst movie.
But yeah, but that scene where he has the talk, the dad talk with Peter, and he's like, and I love that he gives Peter an out. Like, that seems like it would seem like real. Like, he's not this evil guy. Like, he is wrong, obviously. But he also, when he also, like, later, like, says, like, how do you think Tony Stark paid for the fucking Avengers Tower? He sold weapons to bad guys. And, like, I'm doing the same thing, but I'm wrong. And it's like, he's right. Like, he gives this whole, like, Bernie Sanders speech about the 1% and shit. And it's like, yeah, dude's, like, telling the truth. Like, this is what we do. Like, we are mad at street level crime, but we can sell $1 billion worth of weapons to Saudi Arabia, and it's fine. But when he has that speech with Peter Parker, it is like probably the best scene in the entire movie. And it's a kid and Michael Keaton in a car, and it's just him, and it's just Michael, Peter Parker in the back seat, Michael Keaton in the front seat. And then he's like, I'll kill you and everyone you love. And so he's like, no, go in there and have a good time. Show my daughter a good time. But not too good, huh?
It's good that Michael Keaton... It's too bad that Michael Keaton's already gotten an Oscar for playing Birdman. Because I think he really shines in this film.
Yeah, he is so good. And he's still like that because he still has that Michael Keaton charm. So like, even when he's a bad guy... Like, when he opens the door and he's like, hey, you're Peter. Like, it's still like, oh, it's Michael Keaton, fucking Mr. Mom is great. And he's just like, hey, how you doing? Yeah, I was like, oh, my, Mr. Mom's a real jerk
I'm
now.
I'm trying to remember, did he know who Peter was as soon as he opened the door?
No. As he was driving. Did you guys watch this movie?
Yeah, I did, but I forgot. I forgot how he remembered.
As he was driving.
He realized he was in New York.
The daughter, Liz Allen, says...
Spills the beans.
Liz Allen says...
He wasn't there when...
Peter has a... internship with Tony Stark, and he's like, oh, what's that like? And she's like, oh, he's friends with Spider-Man. He's like, so you know Spider-Man? And he's like, yeah. And then feels like weird, and he's like, so what was that, the Washington thing? He's like, I wasn't in the... And then I forget the second question that he asked, and then he was just like, and then he takes a fucking gun out and has a talk with him. But that's also like, as a writer, I'm sure when the writers were like, this is great, because when you're, like, as Fausto was saying, like, a 15-year-old kid getting the talk from the dad, he might as well be holding a gun and be a supervillain. Like, it's scary as shit, even if you're a good dude, but, like...
And I just feel like, let's talk about Superman, Spider-Man's sidekick, played by actor Jacob Batalon, who... has some controversy in the sense that, you know, people are very unhappy whenever there is a ethnic person. And if it's not all white, the franchise isn't all right.
Yeah, it was my only complaint about the movie.
And my feeling is like, you know, the racial diversity is where we're at as a country. And it's a part of the reality for a lot of young people today.
And it's Queens.
Mm-hmm. And it's New York. Mm-hmm. And so it's really great and exciting and wonderful that Spider-Man finally is dating, African-American girls, and his best friend is Filipino, and this is really good.
And you see, in his group, his debate club, or the genius club that he belongs to, there's a lot of ethnic diversity there as well. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, Hollywood's finally listening. They're saying, hey, listen, people want to see themselves represented on the screen. But also, too, is like you're looking at a global audience here. And so the people in Asia, the people in Africa, the people in the Philippines, they need to see somebody up on the screen that kind of that they can relate to.
White people want to see diversity too. that's, it's not, you know, I want to, I'm, you know, 73% of the audience is this, so we have to have 73% up on the screen. It's that people want to see diversity, regardless, because diversity is interesting. Diversity tells stories that we haven't heard from before and takes Spider-Man into a exciting, amazing place that, you know, Spider-Man, and that's why I'm titling this show. It's like, Spider-Man is amazing again.
But if it took place in like Kansas or whatever, it would be like, all right, they're just like trying to jam them in. It would seem,
but there's diversity all over this country.
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm saying like with Queens, it just fits in. It would be insane if it was just a bunch of white people and like
the other Spider-Man movies.
And like, yeah, and like Peter Parker can speak Spanish, and it's like, yeah, of course he can. Like, he speaks Spanish. He knows enough of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah, of course he can do that. He lives in fucking Queens. Like, it's not a weird thing.
Let's talk about sexy May Parker, played by actress Marissa Tomei, who, you know, for people who are not familiar with her films, mm-hmm. she was very much a...
My Cousin Vinny.
She won an Oscar for it, right?
Yeah, and she was in Before the Devil Knows You're Dead and The Wrestler. That was like... And she showed her titties in both. Wow. She got plowed by Philip Seymour Hoffman in the very beginning of The Devil Knows You're Dead. Like, it starts out, you just hear like... And he's just pounding her from behind. It's weird. Anyway, the wrestler, she has Pierce, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Mm. It's a really good movie. I think it was nominated for Oscars. The Wrestler was definitely nominated. Mm-hmm. And she has Pierce titties, and she's a stripper in that movie too. But yeah, she was on Seinfeld. She was on an episode of Seinfeld.
She was the romantic love ideal of.
George Costanza.
Yeah,
she actually came into a restaurant where I worked once because I think her old roommate or something was working there.
Did she ask about me?
No, she didn't know. I didn't know you at the time. She may have been like, well, maybe that was that why she was screaming, Where's Brian? At the top of her lungs. No, it's nice to see, like, because, you know, we've had Aunt May before, and like, there's usually like an older woman. Like, we've had her like on the first movie with Tobey Maguire. She was really old. And then with Andrew Garfield, it was Sally Field, who is, you know, older, but still kind of has some youthfulness to her.
Yeah.
But like, here's an Aunt May you want to screw.
It doesn't really make sense why. Why the younger parents of Peter Parker in the Amazing Spider-Man 2, why the fuck Sally Field would be? No, I think was it Sally Field? I think Martin Sheen is it's so weird why it was always like it never really occurred to me because it was just sort of, I don't think it ever really occurred to anyone because it was like, this is just how it's always been. So you don't really think about it.
Yeah.
But then once somebody's like, wait, why is Aunt May 900 years old? That's like supposed to be the same age as the parents around. Like, that's weird. If your brother is 40 years difference than you,
like a great Aunt May or something,
or maybe been a nickname for her. But I thought she added a lot of comedic levity, and, you know, and certainly casting like the scene with Hannibal Buress playing the
gym teacher,
the gym teacher, but she's also running detention.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he doesn't care.
And he's just like, stop, whatever. You know, there's just a lot of great comedic moments. And, you know, actor Jacob Batalon really steals the movie when the teacher comes into the computer room and says, what are you doing? And his cover's like, I'm looking at porn. Mm-hmm. And the audience, that at least when we saw couldn't stop laughing for 15 minutes.
Oh, they were laughing hysterically. And then afterwards, after the show, the little kid behind me turns to his dad and says, what's porn?
And you're like, let me show you. Uncle Mark, show you.
And his dad's like, oh, you know, naughty movies. But yeah, there were some kids that were just laughing and laughing and laughing. Like, that laugh just trailed on forever. Probably it was somebody laughing at, like, you know, somebody who had recently been caught watching porn.
Well, that's a relatable thing about being a teenager, is getting caught looking at porn. It's, this movie is so great at delivering those relatable moments that we can laugh at.
And the principal was that lady from Orange is the New Black.
And she's always good at being, you know, this strong,
the unsmiling black woman.
Well, she's Orange Puerto Rican.
Unsmiling Puerto Rican woman.
Yeah.
But I think that we can all agree the actual person who stole the movie comedically was a young man named Chris Evans.
Oh, yeah.
That got the biggest,
the porno thing got the biggest laugh for us.
For our theater, like, people went nuts with the after credit scene where he was saying, like, the patience and you can just be wasting your time. Did you guys not wait?
Yeah, yeah.
No, we saw it.
Of course
we
watch it.
Yeah. And also, it's great when he's given the speech before
the detention.
First the gym. And he's like, this is your gym teacher. And he points to the other director. And Hannibal Buress like on the other one. Hannibal Buress is like, so that's Captain America. I think he's a war criminal now or something. I don't know. Anyway, he wants you to do push-ups. I wonder, that seems like that had to have been ad-libbed, but...
You think?
And I think so. And then when he goes to detention, and there's the chair just turns around and the Captain America just sits. He's like, so you're in detention. God, that's just... That would be wonderful if Captain America, like, the only thing he does is just, like, Troy McClure of the Marvel Universe.
Hi, I'm Captain America.
And it doesn't feel like wedged in. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. Authentic. Like, yeah, like, because he's also like from the 40s. So, like, he's one of the big things about Captain America is that, like, he's cheesy.
For sure.
Yeah,
he's the kind of guy that would do a video like, and this is how you pull your foreskin back and clean it, boys.
Yeah, and he'd be like, make sure that you wash your toenails before clipping them. You don't want to hurt yourself.
I gotta say, Captain America or Chris Evans could teach me how to do a lot of things.
Nice.
Yes. Who's hotter, Chris Pratt, Chris Evans, or Chris Pine?
I'm gonna say quick. Chris Pratt, Chris Evans, Chris Pine.
Yep, same here. What about you, Brian? Fuck, marry, kill.
Chris Pratt is definitely number one if he's like being Star-Lord or the Andy Dwyer character, then Chris Evans and Chris Pine. But Chris Pine is one of the greatest parts of Wonder Woman. And he's just like, he's so great. Like, and if you saw his Saturday Night Live recently, like, he's so funny.
Where he twerked.
Yes. He is a great comedic actor. Like, he really gets it. And he's a wonderful Kirk, and he's made it his own. And he's like Steve, what's his name in Wonder Woman?
Oh, Steve Trevor. Steve Trevor.
Yeah, he's basically Kirk in that movie. And he fucks a goddess.
He plays the same character in pretty much every movie.
He smashed in the middle of World War I. Only Kirk can do that. Only Kirk could be like, listen, you've never fucking had a dick in you. You just fucking killed a guard tower and threw a tank over someone. I'm gonna put this dick in you and just take it.
Smash it.
Yeah, I'm gonna tie you up with that golden lasso.
That's a new term, kids. To smash is to fuck.
Hell yeah.
So, and you just rang the bell, and that reminded me of like when they were on the Genius Club, and like, please don't use the bell for comedic effect. I've told you, you've been warned.
Yeah, that, I need to make that a ringtone. I feel like Spider-Man Homecoming owes so much to John Hughes, and especially Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And one of them is, you know, I would think John Hughes and Steven Spielberg, a major character in all their films is suburbia. And in this movie, you know, we're so used to seeing Spider-Man flying through New York City that when he finally is stuck out in the suburbs and he's running through these houses and crashing through their homes and stuff, and he's kind of rendered powerless. Like, the city is a source of his strength.
Yeah, because those tall buildings allow him to fly.
That's always been a thing that I'm sure that they've dealt with in the comics, but it's always been a thing of, like, Spider-Man can't fly... And he doesn't have, like, a Spider-Mobile. So, like, how does he get places if there's nothing there? You can't go to, like, Iowa and fight crime because it would take forever to get places without a car. Right. And that's also, like, part of the fun of Spider-Man is because, like, he's not cool. Like, that's the thing. Like, his character, he's not a cool guy, and he doesn't belong with the Avengers. Like, there's people, like, he doesn't belong next to Iron Man or Captain America. He does, like, while he's fighting, and you're like, But then he like always like sort of brings it back to like saying something stupid or whatever. And you're like, oh, right. Like you're just an annoying little dickhead. Well, so like you don't deserve to be here, really.
And being a young guy, too, it makes things like exciting. Like if one of the other superheroes jumps into a car and goes off and drives, you're like, whatever. But because he's like this 15-year-old kid who technically, you know, can't drive, when he jumps into a car and tries to drive, it's thrilling. You're just like, oh, my God, he's driving and he doesn't know how to drive. What's going to happen?
Yeah. And he uses the web to turn. God, it's so, and it just flips over. Oh God, he's so bad at his, like, that's the other thing of how, like, yeah, it seems so realistic of like how bad he is at his job. Like he's pretty good, but like in the other superhero movies we see, everything looks effortless. Like when they came in and like tried to stop the ATM robbers, they would have just taken care of that easily. Spider-Man gets like his ass handed to him. He's flying in the middle of the thing and he's like, what is that gun? And then the sandwich guy is like, yeah, Spider-Man's fighting the Avengers and they're all flying around or something. But then that's the other thing of like the laser gun like shooting up the sandwich place is like such a Spider-Man thing of the unintended consequences and how you can't just win the day and everything is wrapped up perfectly, like they show us in movies and TV and books and stuff like that. You like win the day, but then Liz Allen's moving and he had to run out on her on Homecoming and her dad's in jail and like everything is just bad, like everything has been destroyed. And so it's always like the thing of making the right choice is always the hardest choice, and it's one of the greatest, it is like the best part of Spider-Man that hasn't really gotten, they didn't really get it, except in the first one with Sam Raimi when Mary Jane tells Peter she loves him and he says, and she's like, do you love me? And he's like, I don't. And then he just like turns around and walks away, and that's how the movie ends. And a lot of people were pissed at that ending. But that's Spider-Man, like never being able to be like to get the goods from all of the things that he gets.
Homecoming has something that the new Wonder Woman movie doesn't have, which is it incorporates the best theme song of the comic book superhero into the movie's soundtrack. And that is the Superman Spider-Man theme song, which is what is that? Paul Francis Webster and Robert Bob Harris. It was composed for the 1967 cartoon show, and the in the Wonder Woman TV series, Charles Fox and Norman Gimbel composed an equally good, you know, Wonder Woman, the whole world is waiting for you. And these songs were composed because they were in the way they were, and they put a lot of money and effort and hired some really talented people to make these songs because they wanted to be played in on the radio. And certainly, like, the Spider-Man theme song has been covered for years by everybody. Michael Bublé, Aerosmith, a punk band named the Mr. T.
The Mr. T Experience.
Mr. T Experience. It's been covered extensively, and it's a wonderful theme song. And this movie actually brings it into the score, not just in the beginning, but actually incorporates it throughout the film, which is really nice.
Here's a question. What do you think is the most famous of the themes? And here's the three.
The Wonder Woman?
No. Forget the Wonder Woman. I don't think that's one of the top three, I feel, are the Spider-Man, which I think is the winner. Yeah. But the second one is Batman, which is that. Batman. And then the third one is like everyone knows what that, you know, that you like, it makes you just want to rip your shirt open when you hear that and run across the street.
The original Superman movie is on Netflix for a while. I'm not sure if it still is there, and we just caught it the other day, and it felt so, I have to say, cheap, you know, and yet that iconic theme comes on and you're just like, you're mentally so attached to the image of Superman. To me, it's still hard to imagine anybody playing Superman other than Christopher Reeve. It's really hard to imagine. Gal Gadot does an amazing job, but it feels like Gal Gadot is walking in Linda Carter's, you know, perfect boots. And I feels, and I think that for Tom Holland, he does a really great job as Spider-Man because we forget the other actors' portrayals of the character.
Tobey Maguire was perfect, but there's, I mean, they've also, the problem with Andrew Garfield, like one of the biggest problems was Sony didn't really have a great idea of what to do other than we need to make another movie in order to retain the copyright. So there wasn't that much differentiation between the Peter Parker character of Tobey Maguire versus the Andrew Garfield. It was basically the same kind of character. There's little differences. Tom Holland, though, has a totally different like take solely because of how young he is. And the like, it cannot be like it's, we're talking a lot about like Spider-Man Homecoming as itself, but without the greater Marvel universe, it, because like that really helps us understand how much Spider-Man, like the smallness of him and how he isn't ready for something like fighting like the end of the Avengers or something. Like he can handle himself in Civil War, kind of. But like even when Tony was like, if fucking Steve wanted to smash you and kill you, like he would have. Like if he wanted to lay you out, he would have done it. And he's like, the wind kind of goes out of Peter's sails if that's when he says that. But I feel like that's a huge thing that Marvel has done also, is like shown us all of these huge things that we've had with, and all of them being the Earth or the universe being destroyed. And then we have a very small thing. And I love, love, love that Spider-Man saves Michael Keaton at the end, that he doesn't just let him die.
Otherwise, he'd be like Superman.
He would be like every single, like all the superhero movies, they end with the bad guy dying somehow. And Spider-Man, like, that's great. And I love, like, one of the best things is the Spider-Man things. Like, there's all these little things, like how he leaves notes on criminals outside of like police stations and the comics and stuff. And it, he'll just write like, from your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and like it'll, and he did that in this, and he leaves and a little note and stuff, and
it felt authentic.
Yeah, too. Like it seemed, because, and that's why like the deconstruction of like, what would it be if you were a teenager and you became this? Like you still want to act cool, but like you don't have like Tony Stark tech.
To, well, like, you can't walk in there and be like, hey, I arrested this guy. Yeah, you know, and you need to like hit it and run.
So you're like, I have a notebook. And so you just like leave a message for him. And like, that's the best that you can do.
Well, in the conversation that Tony Stark has with Tom Holland, Peter Parker, about, you know, using the phrase, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, felt authentic in ways that, when we see it, you know, the Electric Company in the 1970s or in the cartoon series in the 1960s or in any of the Spider-Man movies, it didn't feel like it came out of an organic place. And that's a difficult thing for a writer or a director to accomplish. And I feel like we got to create a Spider-Man without an origin story. And that is so refreshing for a superhero franchise comic book film, which I'm frankly just sick of origin stories. I don't want, we know where these people are coming from. Don't, you know, I take us into these new exciting places. I mean, it's Spider-Man Homecoming is far, I would say, is a far better film than 90% of the stuff that we've seen lately, because it gives us a everyday look at the life of Spider-Man.
Yes, but I feel like origin stories, I feel like it's a blanket statement, because a lot of times when you're watching the first of a superhero movie of the origin tale, you're just like, all right, get to the part where you're in the costume. I think Wonder Woman, for me, I think did a very good job of, I wasn't constantly like, just let her be Wonder Woman, let her be Wonder Woman. Like, I really liked her being behind enemy lines or whatever, just doing the spy thing. And I liked the fish out of water comedy and things like that. And there's a lot of, like, the Doctor Strange origin, I liked that. And so I feel like it can be done well. It just has to be the right hands that are in the origin. But they also were able, like, the good thing about Spider-Man being, like, the street level, only a few block radius superhero, is the Vulture is like, you don't have to have a long explanation of like, this is why he's after the mark of the stones of Runus because of blah, blah, blah. And be like,
is that what that stuff was?
No, but I'm just saying, like, many eons ago, like, this guy came and then blah, blah, blah. It's like, I'm a dude who likes to steal shit from the Avengers. Again, like, the Marvel Universe is all, like, fitting into each other. And it's like, yeah, that makes 100%, that makes complete sense of, like, you know exactly what his motivation is, and it makes sense, and it's fine, and they don't have to give a bunch of exposition for it.
Brian, we watch it away, and the, you know, the ultimate debate is always like, what is better, Star Trek or Star Wars?
Star Trek.
And why not have both? Certainly J.J. Abrams did.
Oh, well, yeah, if you can have both. But you said, which one's better?
Well, that's ultimately the argument. And, you know, it's been there since the beginning of the internet.
It's called spam, right?
And, it generated spam. Mark, why do they call an argument over Star Trek versus Star Wars
spam? People in, like, early chat rooms, they would talk about, like, Star Wars Star Trek, which one is better. And eventually it was just kind of people being, like, they would just say Star Trek over and over again, or Star Wars over and over again, right?
Back then,
you're spamming it. And yeah, so that's the original term for spam.
Star Wars discussion.
Like, it's tough to think of now, but Star Wars fell out of kind of the public consciousness, not completely, but enough. Like, it wasn't that huge, especially in like something like 93 or 92. That was Star Trek's time. That was the next generation. And there's no way that Star Wars could have held up to that. Like, until they re-released them on the VHS and then put the special editions in the theater, that's when things became, that was the turning point of Star Wars being how it is now, how it's just like everything is Star Wars and everyone loves Star Wars more than everything.
But is right now, are we more excited for a new Star Wars movie or a new Star Trek movie? I think we're more excited about a new Star Wars movie.
Definitely more new Star Wars movie. But there's been a glut of Star Trek, and they don't really have anything new to say. We're going to learn what happened to our friend Luke. Like, we get to learn about, like, and our friend Princess Leia is going to be in there. And so, like, that's the main thing that the episodes have, again, for, like, these long
the Star things. Trek episodes?
Star Wars is like, we aren't like, oh, I wonder what my friend Captain Kirk is doing, played by Chris Pine. Like, that's different than if it was like Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. We're like, oh, I'd like to see my old friends, like, on the ship of the Enterprise or something. But I'm saying, like,
so you're saying there's a sense of nostalgia that we get from Star Trek that we just don't have with Star Wars?
No. We do. I'm saying people want to see Star Wars because it also has the built-in, we're going to find out about Luke Skywalker, who has been our friend now for almost 40 years, just like we got to see Han Solo and Chewie and Princess Leia last time. And so in episode 8, we're going to find out, like, we're going to hear him speak and stuff. And then
what happened to you? How did you end up here? What's going on?
Yeah. And it's something that, like, Rogue One, regardless of, like, how much people liked it, it's like you don't really have affinity for these characters.
At the core of that argument, though, was, you know, whether you're a fan of science fiction or science fantasy. Space operas, right? And some people, you know, don't like the intellectualism of Star Trek. They like the heroic nature of Star Wars.
Yeah, idiots. Who?
And to me, it's like, you know, I've been diehard in the Star Trek camp until I felt like the J.J. Abrams movies really took Star Trek into a Star Wars area where there was not a lot of intellect, there was not a lot of thought put into it, and was just guns in space.
Star Trek Beyond was good, but they're all, like, you know, unnecessary.
They felt unnecessary. They don't feel like they advanced the plot or the characters or the ideas of Star Trek that we find so fascinating and compelling.
Fascinating. Coffee in that nebula.
And ultimately, yeah, coffee in that nebula. And it feels like ultimately the last Star Trek movie that we saw, the characters were like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done with this. You know, it's like everybody wanted to quit Starfleet. And us as the audience members are like, yeah.
Why am I even sitting here?
Why am I in this movie theater? I'm out of here. Bye, guys. Bye, suckers.
Yeah, it's also like when you rewatch, like, The Wrath of Khan, they have that feeling, but it's like the first time they've had it. And it's like, Kirk's like, I'm getting old. And like, galloping across the cosmos is a game for the young, Doctor. And so, like, that time. And like, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
These were also old men. Chris Pine was still young and virile.
That's why. But it also, like,
it sounds jaded and bitter and stupid. Mm. Like, you know, Chris Pine being like, I'm over it. It's like, you've just been given this amazing franchise. You you know.
But it was like, but they did tell you that it's like, it was the day, it was the, he was now like a year older than when his father died or something.
How wise is he got 1 year later?
No, but that happens a lot with people when they get past the age that their parents or that like their mom or their dad lived. It's a really like freaky thing for them. So it makes sense, like, of like, I'm doing the same thing over and over and like, it doesn't feel, because it's also like Picard had that. Also, like when he wasn't,
I shouldn't be here.
Well, when he was just like being told to do like cartography and stuff and just like name stars instead of like doing shit. It's like you, Starfleet, I feel like one of the fun things about Star Trek is it shows how boring space is. Like how it's still a job. Like
and it's giant, there are people walking.
Yeah, and like, and there's people in the ship like walking around with like clipboards and shit. Like they have inventory and shit. Like it's not all just a bunch of like, oh, I'm gonna eject a warp core. Like most of Geordi's day is just spent like looking at nacelles and shit, and I'm being like, oh, you see the game yesterday? Whatever the fuck. Like it's just a job. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel like is so great about Star Trek, is that it like takes the glamour out and makes it very human.
And we can fight racism in space. Now, looking at Star Wars, there's, you know, a lot of hocus pocus, mumbo jumbo, and mysticism and theology.
And Luke Skywalker is a slave owner.
And sentient being robots that are slaves.
Yeah, and they're shot and kidnapped, and they're shackled on their feet. And then they're sold to...
But they're robots.
Yeah, but they also have... But it's shown many times that they have...
Feelings.
They have feelings, both emotional feelings, intellectual feelings, and they can physically feel stuff.
And they fear death.
Yes. C-3PO is constantly being scared of being hurt. And when they show in
He's
Empire...
Just a pussy.
But they show in Empire Strikes Back and in Return of the Jedi... droids screaming when they're being ripped apart. And... fucking R2-D2 screams like in every movie when you get shocked and you go like and so it's like
why did you program them to feel pain?
And then
Darth Vader, who's part robot himself after being, you know, cut into pieces on this volcanic planet, in some ways he's the liberator of He's the Martin Luther King Jr. Of the droids.
He's not a peaceful. He's like a very mean.
He's the Malcolm X.
He's worse than that.
By any means necessary.
He
liberation for the droids.
I don't think liberation for anyone.
That's what Malcolm X's catchphrase was, by any means necessary.
Yes, but he just wants domination. Speaking of domination, so what happened when someone had an argument about this?
So people had an argument about
this. In Oklahoma City, I guess these two guys that were roommates, I put that in quotes, and I'll tell you why it's quotes, because that's what the newspaper says, that they were roommates, they were having an argument about which is better, Star Wars or Star Trek. And then they were still arguing about it. One walks out of the room, and he yells back to the other roommate, he says, "You're just a trick." And I guess that set him off. And so he went and he tackled him, wrestled him to the ground, and then started choking him. And so the guy, I guess, got him off, and then he was able to call.
Got him off?
Well, you know, pushed him off him. He escaped the clutches, and then he called the police, and then the guy who attacked him was arrested. But we don't know is who really won the fight, and we don't know, like, who he was rooting for. If he was for Star Wars or if he was for Star Trek.
I feel like the Star Wars guy is the guy who, like, tried to rape his roommate. As you said, "You're just a trick" seems weird to say to a roommate.
Right? Like, that has to be to somebody, like, that you're having, like, sex with or something, right? I don't know. Why would you say "you're just a trick"?
You know, he's diminishing his affection for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, he's saying, it's like, "You don't mean much to me. You're just somebody I hooked up with.
Oh.
And I just live with you."
That poor guy.
"I don't love you." It's a modern day way of saying "I don't love you."
Or "you're a fuck boy," I guess is how they call them now, don't they?
Swipe to the left, but I should have swiped to the right. Mm-hmm. "I look good with the lights on and you don't."
That's them having a dick fight.
A sword fight.
NPR tweeted the Declaration of Independence on 4th of July. I guess they do this every year.
I find that hard to believe.
Oh my God, come up with better content.
What boring tweets.
There's a 4th of July every year now?
So National Public Radio's Twitter account every year, I guess, you know, because they don't have actual content. on the 4th of July, maybe. They tweet the Declaration of Independence, only this year right wingers are like, shut down public radio. And I'm like, fools on you, assholes. Public radio is funded by right wing corporations to begin with.
Well, and the thing is, though, too, they didn't realize it was the Declaration of Independence. They just thought it was NPR trolling Trump
and advocating for violence against Trump.
Yeah.
And so
this is the document that was signed on, you know, on the 4th of July and what we're celebrating.
And to me, I'm just kind of like, you know, this is why I try to use Twitter sparingly. Mm-hmm. Follow Brian's Dong on Twitter, mm-hmm. but don't expect a lot of miracles happening there.
Hey, oh, speaking of, just on my, how dare you?
Or Feast of Fun. But I don't, you know, to me, it's like I just use it basically to interact with other people. But it's, you know, or the listeners may post really great comments. I mean, Little Gay Blog wrote this beautiful article that, you know, overlooked Brian Sweeney.
Sorry, you weren't Little Gay Blog worthy.
Mm. Well, you just don't come on the show often enough, you know.
Bitch. You just a trick. How big. You a trick, Little Bit Gay Vlog.
You just a trick.
You just a trick.
Oh, poor Uloma Curry Walker, 45 years old, was deeply in debt, so she decided she was going to hire somebody to kill her husband.
He can't do that?
So she can collect the $100,000 insurance policy. But the joke was on her. He never changed his policy over to his new wife, and the ex-wife was the beneficiary.
How did they find out? How did she get caught?
Oh, she got caught because it was a murder for hire. She hired somebody to do it, and I guess they got caught.
So the husband didn't get killed.
The husband is dead.
Killed him, though.
He is dead. She paid somebody money to kill him, and they got caught, and he's dead. And the ex-wife, I don't know if she got the payout or not, because do they pay out on murder?
A murder, but not suicide. So what was he? Was he a rich dude? Or it doesn't say?
No, I don't think he was all that rich, but he did have a... You know,
he just killed him for like $100,000.
I have a life insurance policy on Mark if he accidentally dies.
Mark, let's do this.
Mark accidentally dies,
how much do I get if you die?
I don't know. Like minimum wage.
Jesse, let's kill him.
For a year or something like that. Like,
minimum wage for a year? That's good. Like, you just do nothing? Like, that's good.
$17,000 or some pittance or something.
That's not great, but
you could fund the next season of Cooking with Drag Queens.
Yeah. Oh wow. Which Brian, is just cook with some drag queens with me?
No thanks.
You'd be a judge.
I mean, I can be there. Yeah, I don't want to dress up.
So season 3 of Cooking with Drag Queens, which technically is season 10. But who's counting?
Will we get Tom Holland on?
I hope so. Oh, yes. He's
tweeted Tom Holland.
Listen, Tom Holland come to my house, and he's over 21.
We are not cooking anything in the kitchen. Oh, we're going to be big.
There's going to be heat in the kitchen and in the bedroom and on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Cook those hands.
And you don't have to pretend like you're half gay for RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
I mean, but also, like... If Andrew Garfield wants to come over and cook, he's allowed as well.
He can cook too. Tobey Maguire.
And we'll fuck you too.
But see, the problem,
we'll fuck any of you.
I don't know.
Any Spider-Man.
I don't.
You won't fuck Tobey Maguire?
No.
He's Seabiscuit.
I'll fuck CGI Tobey Maguire, not actual Tobey Maguire. Chris Evans.
I just Googled Tobey Maguire today. He still looks good.
Yeah. Saved a woman or a kid or something.
He's like 42 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all I'm getting is the CGI photos from... No, there's better guys on Grindr and Instagram.
Famous.
He looks like one of the... he looks like that guy who used to hang out with Michael Jackson in the 80s, who now has a band.
Corey Feldman.
That's what Tobey Maguire looks like now.
Oh, he does not look anything
like Corey Feldman. Google it.
Okay, but what would happen, Mark, if you and Fausto like went somewhere and... Yeah. Tobey Maguire was there. Would Fausto freak out?
Would he freak out?
No, I just look. I'd just be like,
I don't want. You're not sleeping with me, Toby.
He would run. Would just walk up to him and slap him in the face and be like, "Don't you even think about
hotter guys out there."
There's you're so many hotter. There's literally, I can do better.
Oh, he's so cute, though. Come on, I'm looking at pictures of him right now.
I mean,
he's adorable.
CGI Spider-Man Tobey Maguire, absolutely. Real life Tobey Maguire. Let's think about it.
But Tobey Maguire is straight. So, like, isn't that a big thing? Like,
Everybody likes dick.
Those actors will, you know, If I have the right role, he's, you know.
So why are we mad at Andrew Garfield if every single person is gay except Andrew? And then Andrew Garfield's like, I'll be gay, and I'm all these people are mad.
I'm just like, whatever.
I'm not hating on him. I'm just kind of raising an eyebrow going, oh, now that someone else is Spider-Man, while the movie's coming out, you have to blab about how bisexual you are. You know,
yeah, because he's like, in a gay play. Why would they ask Spider-Man, like, hey, would you fuck a dude, Spider-Man? Like, that's a weird question.
Well, we got a poster at the movie theater, and they have, like, Spider-Man's, like, middle finger, like he's doing, you know.
He's fingering Andrew Garfield.
It looks like it. Something's going on.
And
there.
The finger looks, it's like,
it looks like Brian's dong.
Accidental penis. Yeah. Brian's dong.
I think it's not so accidental either. It looks like that person making that, it was like, I'm gonna make this finger look as much like a dick as I can possibly get away with.
This is official movie merchandise with official a penis
dick swag.
This is like the Little Mermaid castle with the penis on the turret. You know, this is the same thing. We're posting an image of it. You decide, is this an accidental penis or intentional penis?
No Jessica Rabbit's no panties. Remember back, like, it was weird back in, like, 88 when the news came out. It's like, hey, they did a frame by frame and Jessica Rabbit's not wearing panties when she gets thrown from the car. You don't remember this?
Did you see her coochie?
Not really. It's just like, just they just didn't color it in. Mm-hmm. But everyone, it's
does
also
have
weird.
A nice flappy mud flaps in them?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of labia and it looks like Roger Rabbit's ears. That's what it is. Very scary.
Hence the attraction.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fabulous people like you. Go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a contribution or become a Plus subscriber and access our 13 years of podcasting magic on our website, feastoffun.com.
Lucky 13.
Yes, go to feastoffun.com/plus for that.
Well, if you're a big fan of Brian Sweeney, you can access... You've been on our show for 5 years now?
I think so.
When you were like a teenager...
Yes.
You were like,
and I was swinging through the city.
This is Brian Sweeney.
Banging half black chicks.
Banging half black chicks.
Actually, no. Just taking them to a prom or to homecoming and being like, I gotta go. And then not doing anything.
I'm trying to age your voice through time. So, like, you know, the first year you're like, hi, I'm Brian Sweeney. I love Star Trek.
Hi, and then, guys.
And then now you're like,
you guys like snap bracelets?
And now today you sound like,
now I'm a man with a snap bracelet.
Would you want to put it on my dick? It snaps around anything.
Big fat girl. Was she a big, great big fat girl?
That's the problem, is like when you try to sound butch for somebody you just met at a bar and you sound like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. Oh, wait, are you having a beer right now? Do you want to get a beer?
Would you fuck me?
I'd fuck me.
Do they play Goodbye Horses in gay bars? And you guys all just tug it and start dancing in front of the mirror?
I used to do it when I was a drag queen. That was a bit that I did before. Was that before Silence of the Lambs? Yeah.
You were already just tucking the Goodbye Horses?
Well, no, I was...
It was something in the zeitgeist, the Goodbye Horses.
It was a zeitgeist thing because it was... I was hired by my friend Sheila to be a backup dancer for her punk band Liquid Mice. And so we drove to New Orleans in the middle of the night. Mice. And I dressed up in drag. And my thing, they have this song, like, it's kind of like a Pussy Manifesto thing. And I'm tucking my dick between my legs and pretending to masturbate on stage in drag.
God, it was amazing. It was so great. And then, like,
no video cameras.
In the early 90s when anything was shocking. Like, if Andrew Garfield was like, I'm going to fuck a dude later. If that was 1991, people would be like, holy shit. And, like, really? All the gay press would be like, oh, we want to thank Andrew Garfield for making us human and treating us like people. Like, Kurt Cobain's like, I'm okay with gay people. And they're like, oh, my God, this is the greatest man that's ever lived.
Yeah, the thing about it is, like, I don't know, with Andrew Garfield, it just strikes me as a little bit insincere. I don't know. It's the hunch I get. Maybe I'm just jaded by seeing celebrities, like, who feel like their careers are, you know, marching along or not where they want to be. Or, you know, I think Angels in America and starring in Angels in America on Broadway is a fabulous place to be in your career. Andrew Garfield just got nominated for an Oscar last year. I mean, he's doing really well as an actor. Mm-hmm. But the vibe, I like seeing that media coverage, and maybe he just has a bad publicist.
Well, the gay press will take one little thing and they'll all be like, they'll change the headline. He's coming out as gay. And then it's like, you have to read the fine print. The quote was like, I watch RuPaul's Drag Race, you know, so I'm gay.
But yeah. And then there's four billion think pieces and everything is just aggregated. And so like by the time it like reaches you, it's gone through like 7 billion unemployed losers like thoughts. Us. And it's like, how am I going to put it so people clicky on my thingy? Andrew Garfield, fuck you, you dickhead. We don't need you. I hate you. Why can't we give more people? Representation matters. Why are we queer washing? And like then they post that up and they're like, can you believe this bullshit? And they'll be like, another day, another queer wash. You mean straight white hetero cisgender, and then they'll like then
somebody has issues.
Well, like the article, and then it'll be like what was said was, and it'll be like four words from Andrew Garfield, and be like, I don't know about you, but Harvey Milk was a lot better than him, and Spider-Man sucks, and fuck you, and and then they just keep talking, they're like, but then again, whatever, maybe this is what we've come to, and then it's just over, and then people are like, I'm pissed too, let me go on Twitter, Andrew Garfield, why don't you go fuck off, we don't even need you, you're ugly, you stupid, and then everyone's like, I could say something meaner than that, Andrew Garfield, I hate Mondays and you. And then everyone just tries to outdo themselves because people are on the internet think that being negative about something is being intelligent and pithy. And they don't understand, like, no, you have to come up with, like, wittiness. Like, there has to be a witticism for your, like, sarcasm or whatever. You can't just be like, maybe go fuck yourself. And, like, that's the end of your thing. And you're like, way to go, buddy. You really thought this through. But that's what Twitter is. You just fucking barf out your first stupid thought and you're like, meh. And then people are like, that's not fair. And then you just like are like, well, now I'm entrenched and I have to fight back. And I love my first thought. Meh, meh, meh.
Follow Brian Sweeney on Twitter.
Where I do Brian's this all gone. The time.
Right, I so needed that.
Thank I hate you. Andrew Garfield.
Like, that's the internet and the gay media blogosphere with people and their coming outs and they're grasping for straws. I thank
There's
you.
A lot of great I'm content a, out
but
there.
It only, but if that. You notice, like, and it's been happening, obviously, more and more over the years, like, it starts out like Perez Hilton, say. Okay. At a certain point, Perez Hilton, it starts going back at him. So then people who start piling on Perez Hilton and like doing.
Is he still blogging? I think he is.
And yeah, so like the people who go after Perez Hilton as the in the same way that he used to, they're the heroes now. And it's just like all this like negativity. You eventually just start eating yourself and you'll always you have to always keep one eye over your shoulder because they're going to come after you.
That's why always. You got to be a whore.
What do you mean?
Well, I think about it.
Andrew Garfield
like,
tried, and you got all mad.
No, because he's not actually having the sexiness fun. You know, he's like, I might do this. I'm considering doing this. And you're just like, oh, come on. Just suck the dick already. Stop.
Don't you think he's sucked a dick? He's famous. Has.
You know,
he's on TV. He's on the movie.
Hey, put up or shut up. This is all I got. Am I right, people?
And the Stones pegged him.
Who's the Stones?
Emma Stone. Oh. They were dating.
But that's a chick. That's
yeah, I guess
expected
that's not
of him.
Gay.
I mean, if he's dating his co-star in a movie that's literally a major franchise.
If he's dating his co-star in a movie, then he probably is a closeted gay.
And I'm just like, I'm just cynical about it because it just feels like there's a lot of amazing, you know, LGBT actors out there who don't get these kind of sweetheart roles. And you have this person who's that, it just strikes me as he's pandering, that he's like intellectually lazy, and he's a great actor. And I feel like, you know, he doesn't need to either. If he's going to explore that aspect of his romantic life in a public sphere, then go ahead and do it. Don't be, you know, talking on a red carpet like, I saw RuPaul's Drag Race and I might, you know, suck a dick one time. And I'm just like,
no, he's saying he's not sucking any dicks.
That's even worse.
I know.
But it's off
that's the
cuff
whole point.
And it's all just taken out of context. And it's like, what was the question? Was it a leading question? And then he's also been doing like 48 hours of just nonstop talking about this shit. And then like the
so
one
we should
thing
forgive,
he does.
Andrew Garfield for Spider-Man and the red carpet, but praise him for Angels in America, which if you haven't seen, they're actually screening simulcasts in movie theaters all across the country. So definitely check it out. It is a very long play, but it's an American masterpiece. And regardless of who you are, take somebody you know and bring some napkins because you are going to be crying a lot. It's an extraordinary, wonderful play.
And if you can sneak in a boxed lunch, do so because it's a fucking long play.
It's longer. It's longer than Gandhi.
Is it really?
Yeah, honey.
In the pants.
Well, you know.
We want to thank you guys so much for listening. And remember, there's a Feast of Fun store with merchandise at feastoffun.com/store. And Mark had something else to say? Or no?
Become a Plus member at feastoffun.com/plus. Well, your contribution to the show is what makes it happen. We can't do it without you, folks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Excelsior! Thank you.